Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton. In tonight's episode, we're going to explore a conversation that David and I started when we were coming up with this topic. Basically, it started off with me saying, I really have no real understanding of how this works. And David said, hey, let's work with it. So what we're going to be talking about tonight is how everything that we see and perceive outside of ourselves has some kind of correlation with something inside of ourselves. And I'm going to throw it over to David to kind of get us started and get the conversation rolling. So go ahead, David.
Okay, well, this is a concept that's distilled down a little bit from the we've all heard that as above, so below, and everything outside of ourselves is a reflection of that which is inside of ourselves. And this is a lot hard for people to digest because it's kind of personal. But when something happens to you, like say your car breaks down, that incident is symbolic of something in the internal landscape. That's kind of what I'm talking about, if that makes sense.
I understand that, and I can see that to a lot of degree in many areas. I just have more of a difficult time with certain things that I think are, like what you said, more personal to me. Like, okay, if this person way over here in this foreign country is saying something that I totally disagree with, how is that a part of me if it's in my perception? When wouldn't that happen anyway, regardless?
Well, you're saying that they're saying something?
Or they're saying something, or they're doing something, or let's say...
I'm saying an event. I'm saying something that happens. We've talked in this show episode about illnesses being representative of something in our spiritual self, or even in our mental or emotional self. But let's say, what if you lose something? Say you lose your wedding ring. Or let's say a tree falls on your car. Or even something to the degree of, say, you get fired from your job. I'm talking about incidents that seem to happen in your life. Incidents. How do you pluralize that? Incidents.
I think that is plural.
Yeah. Incidents, because American sloppy tongue.
Incidences.
Yeah, put like 9 S's on it, and it validates the plurality of it, I guess. So... anyway, the idea that any incident that happens within your life symbolizes something or represents something.
So basically what we're talking about is only events. We're not talking about other things that come into our perception, like stuff that we see or hear or anything, because my understanding originally was that anything that we are able to perceive outside of ourselves, and I mean anything, has a correlation with something inside of ourselves, either mental, emotional, physical, or spiritual.
One might actually imply the other. I mean, you'd have to say that if everything outside ourselves is a representation of something inside ourselves, then even the incidents that happen would also fall into that category because it's all inclusive.
You were referring specifically just to events, or are you referring to this larger picture or everything?
I was referring more to events, and then we can go into a larger picture if we want to, but the events are a little bit closer to home. I'd like to go from, you know, not too esoteric. We can go out there if we want later, you know, but at this juncture, I'd like to kind of start with the idea, because there's a lot of people that don't like that idea. Are you telling me that when that person rear-ended me, that's a symbolization of something? Like, for example, there's a school of thought that people like to use cars. If your car breaks down, there's a breakdown of some sort in your life. There's some kind of breakdown. Or if you lose your cell phone, there's a communication issue that you might be having, and then that's a symbolism of that.
Can we make the jump to say that any personal event that happens to start off with is closely related to one of our chakras and what the meaning of those chakras imply? Like you said, if we lose or misplace our cell phone, that has to do with communication, and that affects our ability to communicate with others and that would be like, yeah, the fifth chakra.
Yeah, fifth chakra.
I always count from top to bottom. I have to say switch. So that'd be like the fifth chakra. So that'd be something like, oh, maybe we're not expressing ourselves, or maybe we're overexpressing ourselves in the communication area. And for whatever reason, we misplaced or lost our cell phone so that we could give our fifth chakra a break. Can we make that jump, or is that kind of going too far too fast?
No, not too much. It might be a chicken and the egg thing. It may be, okay. It may be that we're having our fifth chakra, let's say our fifth chakra is a little closed, and as a result, and to be even a little less body energy kind of thing, we could be saying that there is an issue with us personally. You know, maybe something happened in our childhood, you know, somebody hit our favorite Easter egg and we couldn't find it for years and it traumatized us or whatever. But I don't know, something happened where maybe we just cannot communicate effectively. Maybe there's something we want to say that's really important, but for some reason we've got some kind of issues that keep us from saying what we want to say. So it's manifested in whatever our communication tool is. Our cell phone breaks, it drops in. I know someone who, for some reason, this person's cell phone always falls in something. And it's usually when they're out of town. It falls in a glass of water. It falls in a bowl of soup. It falls in something that leaves this phone useless. I kid you not. I think it was a bowl of cereal, actually, not a bowl of soup, but it was a bowl of cereal. Wow. But this person's cell phone always falls into some liquid container while they're out of town. And I'm like, okay, if there are no coincidences, and if this is a clear pattern of something, what does this pattern represent? What is going on with her? What is she not communicating, or where is the issue? Because, I mean, if we look at cell phones as a symbol of communication, if we look at cars as a symbol of our movement of transportation, or getting from one place to another, or direction in life. I'm taking, like, we have the dream dictionaries that everybody talks about. Take those and make them real. Now they're a reality dictionary. What is this a symbol of? Not just in dreams, but in your real life. What is this particular thing a symbol of? Some people would say that that's reaching.
Well, we could even take it to you'd mentioned the direction of life with cars. Well, I'm like, well, let's take it outside of the car. Let's take it to, you know, the path that we choose to drive, the roads that we choose to go on that get us to our destination. You know, that would be reminiscent of kind of like, we have a destination, we have a goal that we want to arrive at, and if halfway through our trip all of a sudden there's road construction, road closed, take a detour, you know, that would mean that, oh, apparently there's something in my path in life that I might want to have a detour on, or maybe, I don't know, I think I'm getting lost in my own ideas.
No, actually, that's good. That actually is a good one. That's a really good one. I would say, using your detour analogy, I think there are times that it manifests as a message outside ourselves. Like, for example, the cell phone thing that this person I know goes through. Sometimes I think these things happen to put us in places in certain places at certain times. Sometimes I think a detour is not just a detour. We chose that road because we needed to arrive at point B at a different time than we normally would if the detour wasn't there, if we hadn't encountered the detour. So I think sometimes it's a timing thing. Like, for example, with my last car just kept breaking down. And every time I fixed it, something else would go wrong. And it was unrelated, but it was happening like one after the other after the other.
Oh, wow.
And finally, Jackie says, you know, that car is telling you that you're done with the car, that your time is up with the car, and that you need to move on, because I've been very focused on trying to get off of gasoline and get into clean energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've, you know, really been, as you know, I've been kind of studying going to an electric car. But I'm just saying, you know, I'm just going to ride out my car until it dies. And then the car's just like, well, then let me just do you a favor and start checking out early. And it did. And so it pushed my hand and to move to the electric car. It was helping me do something that I wasn't sure I was ready to do, but on a deeper level, I was ready to do it. So it was kind of a push. It was a nudge.
Well, that goes right back to the whole law of attraction stuff, where you were putting that out there, and so the universe was bringing it back to you by way of your car breaking down one after the other, that, so that you could move and be more in alignment with what you really wanted to be, which was an electric car would be more green.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
So I know that we when we talk about spiritual matters, there's all kinds of connections to one another and everything else. So can we say that one way of finding understanding in the events that happen in our personal lives have to do with the law of attraction? Because I think a lot of listeners that we have, as well as myself and probably as you as well, we have so much information out there on how the law of attraction works, how things work, how to manifest things. But if we don't necessarily have so much information when we say, oh, this is a signal to yourself saying you don't like this or you want to change something in your life. But I think if we overlay that simple explanation onto more of the law of attraction ideas, then I think it might be easier to digest for a lot of people. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Yeah, sure. Well, me and the law of attraction, I look at it with one eye open and one eye squinting because I got lemon juice in it. And so...
You're saying that you don't agree with some of the things in the law of attraction?
No, what I'm saying, and we've talked about this in that other episode, but what I'm really saying is, yes, I think this is very much a law of attraction component, but unfortunately, and forgive my being critical about this, but
okay.
The law of attraction schools, they tend to dance in the field with bows of daisies, you know, strewn throughout their hair. And it's like, wish for whatever you want, you'll get it. And, you know, and if you say, well, what if this happens? Well, you just need to wish harder for what you want. But like I say, the law of attraction just is. It's like gravity, you know. You do whatever you want, but gravity is going to be there anyway. The same thing with law of attraction. If you get rear-ended by a car, that's law of attraction. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that came into your life for a reason, or that you attracted those circumstances because there is something in it that you need. It's probably a wake-up call. Maybe it's something to divert you, but it's not an accident. There are no accidents, especially when it comes to vehicles.
So this, what we can say is that any manifested event that we have, like being rear-ended or hitting construction on our way to work or to fun or whatever, is kind of like something inside of us that is actually saying, well, let's take the example of hitting a construction on the way to a party. Maybe that could be something along the lines of, hey, I really want to go out and have fun and party, but there's something inside of me that feels guilty about it. So the universe conspires to, or actually, I'm going to rephrase that. We conspire and express through our actions and choices to have ourselves have a block or have a detour on the way to the party, saying because of the guilt that we have of, oh, we don't deserve to have fun or something like that. It kind of like emotional baggage. And I mean, I could kind of see that, and I know that this, we could say, well, that's still the law of attraction too. And I agree totally with what you're saying with, you know, a lot of people say, oh, rose-colored glasses with whenever they talk about the law of attraction. And I'm looking at it more of, you know, let's take out the happiness and everything and the sadness and everything and look at it as objectively as we can. You know, if you drop a water balloon off of a 30-story building, it's going to fall, and until it hits something, that's just gravity happening. Right. Whereas if, you know, it's kind of like the law of attraction is like, well, if you put this out there, you can make the balloon, the water balloon move over a few meters here or a few feet or a few inches here, so it won't hit the car at the bottom. Like, or maybe it won't, depending on if the wind comes by and moves it or whatever. And I look at it as very specific and critically like that, where it's just like anything we're doing, we're putting that out and it's reflecting back to us through events in our life. And I think this is what you're talking about when we're talking about manifesting, symbolic manifestation, is having this stuff constantly. I'm going to phrase it this way. Basically, We have ideas, thoughts, emotions, beliefs, and attitudes. And we're constantly transmitting those out. And then anything that happens in our life are kind of like the receiving end of that, kind of like receiving the signal. And if we look at it just basically like that, without all the, you know, unicorns and rainbows and rose-colored glasses, it becomes easier to understand that, oh, we got rear-ended while driving the other day. Well, why did we get rear-ended? And, you know, we can initially say, well, the guy behind us just wasn't paying attention. Oh, well, do we know that? And we can go into all this ideas of why we got rear-ended and everything like that. But the point is, we can look at it very simply and say, we got rear-ended. What does that mean? How does that affect my life? And what is that a sign of something larger that's going on internally with me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Yeah, exactly. It's the something larger. Is something larger going on that's internally with me? And I think big things like car accidents are definitely things that transpire because we're not getting the message. And it's our own message. It's not like, I don't want to be all, God is trying to tell me, you know. And I hear people do that all the time. They say, well, I think God's just trying to tell me that I shouldn't be, eating at this restaurant all the time. I'm like, well, I think it's your internal system that's telling you you shouldn't be eating at the restaurant all the time. Or whatever it is. But yes, I agree completely with what you're saying, that there is some kind of big message that's going on in your internal landscape that is pushed itself out because it's like, you know, let me say this. There are little niggling thoughts we get in our heads all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And we just push them away. We bury them and we push them away. And these big things happen. Why do we sit there and fold arms and say, no, that was just an accident? That doesn't mean anything. That doesn't mean I'm supposed to take notice. Well, it's because we've been pushing the little thing away. So why would we all of a sudden go, oh, well, the big thing, yeah, of course. No, we're going to even stamp our feet harder and say, no, 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 no. This was an accident. It was not my fault. And I'm going to be in denial because we don't want to assume that kind of responsibility for whatever's going on in our lives.
And the thing is, that responsibility, we've mentioned it a few times in the past, past episodes, where that responsibility comes from the choices we make, and the choices we make are influenced by the attitudes, thoughts, and beliefs and feelings that we have at that moment. So I'll give you a perfect example. Last week, I had a friend on Facebook post early in the morning, and they were saying, ah, I had a great workout. I feel energized and alive, and I'll probably get to work, and it'll suck, and it'll suck all the life out of me, and life will just be crappy again. And of course, I'm paraphrasing. I basically commented back, well, I hope your self-fulfilling prophecy does not work. And, you know, that was my way of kind of needling them a little bit with saying, if you want it to be that way, because to a large degree, if you're feeling good now and you choose to not feel good later, there's a lot of power you have in that. They responded back and saying, I don't really understand what you're talking about with self-fulfilling prophecy and everything. And so I responded and went into a little bit more detail, and they got, oh, I see what you're saying. I totally understand. And then their next comment was, happy thoughts, happy thoughts, happy thoughts. Yeah. And I was like, you know, it's one of those simple things that we...
But I have to stop you here. I really do. I think when we do the happy thoughts, happy thoughts, happy thoughts thing, that's where I think the law of attraction starts to do us almost a disservice. What happens is we go, happy thoughts, happy thoughts, happy thoughts. And with the happy thoughts, we're pulling up the edge of the rug with one hand and sweeping everything under it with the other.
Mm-hmm.
So if I just think these happy thoughts and just bury this stuff, then I won't have to take notice. And then all of a sudden, the car hits us from behind as a wake-up call saying, you know what? You needed to pay attention. You needed to pay attention to that ugly bit inside you that you were not really looking at. And I think that those things pop up all the time. Like, well, let's say this. What happens when somebody's alarm clock just doesn't go off in the morning? My alarm clock didn't go off in the morning. I think, and I truly believe, when that happens, especially when you can't really explain it, but even when you can explain it, that's trying to tell you something. there's one of two things. Either it was a function for you because of how things were going to play out in the day ahead, or it was something that you created because of something that's going on inside you, and that being late to work or to an appointment or whatever just kind of brings it to the surface, and you have to look at it more directly, right in the eyes.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like people always say, oh, it's the weekend, I can sleep in. Well, if it's Monday and you're not, if it's Sunday night and you're setting your alarm, it's Monday morning and you're still not mentally done with the weekend, like not just normally not done with the weekend, but really not done with the weekend.
Or what if it's a Thursday where you're not coming off the weekend?
Oh, maybe so you're thinking about the weekend in anticipation.
Well, but there could be a lot of things. I mean, I don't think it's cut and dry when those things happen.
Oh, no, it's not.
And you know, it's kind of funny. I was reading about the, let's see if I pronounce this right, Ho'oponopono?
Oh, yeah.
Ho'oponopono? Yeah, Ho'oponopono. And our esteemed guest, Darcy, she's practiced it or studied under it. I don't remember the particular approach she had with it, but I know she's worked with it. But I was reading a little bit about how there was a doctor in Hawaii, and he worked at this clinic, and it was a mental institution, and it was a really, really hardcore mental institution where the people were pretty violent and pretty mean, and their attrition rate was high. People quit all the time. People couldn't work there. People called in sick all the time, and they hired him on, and he said, just give me an office and give me everybody's files. And so they did this, and then as he was there, these patients started actually getting better and less violent and things like that. So they were kind of righting themselves, and they're saying, what are you doing? And he says, I just look at their files, and I just do I practice the Ho'oponopono. And when they say, what is that? What do you do? What are you actually doing? And he says, I look at their file, and then I say, I'm sorry, I love you. And they say, well, what? I don't understand. And they say, well, what it is all these patients are of my own creation. Because I have the universe embodied within me, they are products, they are partially of my own creation, and they're in my world, and I'm aware of them, so they're of my creation. So what I have to do is I have to heal the part of me that is within myself that has created this. And so that goes back to the beginning of your episode when we talk about if everything is connected and somebody says something across the world that you don't like, is that of your creation? And I say yes.
This is the perfect example because I've always had difficulty with Ho'oponopono. It seems much more esoteric to me to assign this relationship to the world outside of ourselves and connect it to the world inside of ourselves. And this is exactly why I was, when you had mentioned the topic, that I was like, I don't really have a really good understanding of that, because to me, there is some things that make sense with that, but on the other hand, not. And the simplicity of it, I got that, no problem. Some things are very simplistic and you can have great results. I think the difficulty that I have, especially with that story, and I've heard that, I've read that story before, and it's a really awesome story, is...
Even if it's crap. That's what you're saying.
I'm not going to say that.
I'm poking at you. Go ahead.
I know. But the thing is, from my understanding as a healer and whatnot, the only thing I can see happening there is that you're taking on the influence of other people that you are aware of, that are in your awareness. Once they're in your awareness, then you're saying they're part of me, and I'm going to forgive that part of myself and then say that I love that part of myself. And at that point, you're not only accepting that part of these people in your awareness, you're also sending that energy, that intention out to them as acceptance. Because like in the story, very violent mental patients, most people probably don't think very highly of them. There's probably a lot of fear. There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of, I might be hurt. And I think the same thing goes into with a lot of those in the criminal corrections facilities and stuff like that, because, you know, we have this kind of idea that, oh, you're here because you've done something wrong, and the legal system says that you're a bad person. And when we do something like the Ho'oponopono, you're saying, I accept you, I forgive you and I love you. And that acceptance, I can see how that can happen. And I, from an energetic standpoint, I got that. From a healer standpoint, I got that. It's just from a more of a theoretical idea of these people are literally connect. You're saying these people, these ideas, these events, these everything in my perception, in my awareness, in some way is reflecting something inside of me that's internal. That becomes very difficult to swallow, especially when we live in this age now where information goes around the world in a matter of minutes or seconds, depending on who you get to, and it filters out through social media and through news places and everything just in a matter of moments. What this implies is saying that if somebody on the other side of the world, or somebody right down the street, or somebody even in a story of fiction that we're reading or watching or listening to is murdered or otherwise, you know, harm has come to them, then we're saying that there's something inside of us that is expressing that being hurt. And I'm saying the connection there does not work for me.
Okay. What about it doesn't work?
Okay, if I had to be, you know, extremely simplistic, I'd say there's an obvious disconnect between me and whatever that part is.
Okay.
And there's part of me that's saying, well, if that's the case and there is a disconnect, then that would imply that there is a disconnect with some part in myself, in my psychology, with something outside of myself, in my awareness, in my perception, in something I hear, which means that every story, every news story that I don't hear is not in my awareness, but yet it still happens and it affects somebody somewhere that can trickle out and eventually get to me even if I don't hear the story, kind of like the whole 6 degrees of separation, where the whole idea is we are connected with only, I think, a maximum of 6 degrees of separation from everyone else in the whole wide world. Mm-hmm. That goes along the whole lines of we're all connected. I got that. But at the same time, if somebody in my 6 degrees of separation, you know, let's say whatever happens, the story fizzles out by person three from the event, then I don't hear about it. It's not in my perception. It doesn't happen. It's not real to me. Unless I'm having an awareness of it, it's not realistic to me. It's as real to me as having a random thought of, oh, unicorns jumping on rainbows. That was kind of a fun Thursday. You talk to somebody else and they're like, what are you talking about? Oh, it was a good time, man. So that's where I get the difficulty is, or if I'm not made aware of it, then I have a very strong difficulty saying that, oh, it did happen. It's part of my awareness because I'm part of this whole world. And it gets all jumbled up in my brain because it's like, well, if I am connected to everybody, then everything that happens to everybody happens to me. Mm-hmm. But yeah. At the same time,
I don't think it's everything that happens to everybody happens to you. I think that it's more like if you took how many genes or chromosomes are there? There's billions and billions. What if this person, what if somebody murdered somebody violently somewhere in the world? What if they're a representation of some gene or some chromosome or some cell of you? What if that's the death of one of your cells? What if what if every time somebody got murdered, there was a cancer cell that just came and went in you? And what if you read news stories about people getting murdered all the time, and all of a sudden you found yourself developing cancer? What I'm saying is that there, I do believe that there is a correlation between the events that happen in the world and our own inner landscape. I believe that implicitly. And I think the case with the doctor that we talked about with the Ho'oponopono, what that was is there, I think it's kind of a part of quantum physics as well. What this person did is he found the part of his internal landscape, the part of his creation matrix, I'm just going to call it that, his own personal creation matrix, in other words, his personal godness, as it were. And what he did was he resolved that within himself, and he found that he made a quantum shift into a reality where those people were different, where those people were less violent in that particular scenario. But at the same time, if a story encounters you, I know what you're saying. You're saying is if a tree falls in the forest and no one's hear it, it's that kind of same idea. But to me, it's like you either heard it or you didn't. You're saying if you heard it, whether or not you heard it, it doesn't impact you. But I will tell you this. If you hear the news story of it versus whether you didn't, it impacts you completely differently.
Oh, yeah.
You can't say that those two are it impacts you the same way. It impacts you just having heard the story of it changes you on a fundamental level.
Or even hearing somebody's brief comment about a story that you're not familiar with.
Exactly. Once your awareness intersected with the event, I'm not saying the event doesn't exist because you're not aware of it, but I'm saying that, number one, you have changed implicitly because your awareness is brought to the event. Number two, if you want to go with the whole law of attraction thing, the law of attraction brought that event into your awareness that resonated with whatever was in you that was like it.
It's still mind-boggling to me, though.
Well, that's why we do this podcast, to boggle minds.
Yeah, and the thing is, I find this very interesting because I have spent majority of my life contemplating a lot of these spiritual, philosophical ideas, and this is just one that it just blows my mind, and it's like, I cannot make sense of this. Every time I start thinking about it, my head starts to spin, and it's interesting because even what we've talked about here in this podcast, it makes so much sense. It's like, yes, I understand this. Yes, I understand this point. I totally get what's happening here. I understand the mechanics of this here, what's happening here. But when it comes right down to it, when it comes right down and says, hey, you know, my friend that I grew up with in high school just found out he got married. Oh, okay. There's a disconnect for me. There's something that says, oh, a friend of a friend just got married. Cool. Sure. Why not? But I'm very neutral about the experience. I don't have as much of a investment in a friend of a friend of a friend getting married as I do with a friend that I know personally getting married.
Well, here, let me say this. If you have a friend of a friend of a friend who's getting married, and somebody says, oh, by the way, your cousin's brother's wife's uncle's teacher's mechanic just got married, you'd be like, oh, okay, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But if somebody says, so-and-so just got married, and then you go to the store, and then you hear somebody talking about a wedding, and then you leave there, and you see this billboard for a wedding expo, and then weddings keep coming up. Aren't you going to go, wait a minute, what's going on here? That's when I start saying that something, that whatever's in you is starting to manifest outward.
Yeah, yeah. So would you say that a positive way to take this whole idea of what's manifesting outside of us is manifesting inside of us? Or out, did I say outside or inside?
Vice versa, yeah.
Yeah. That until we see more than just one example of it in a certain time frame, that we can ignore it as just a passing thought, as a passing idea or a passing story?
I wouldn't limit it to that. I would say it's, if it gives you pause, if you take notice of it, even if a passing story makes you go, huh, then there may be something to it. I think it's more just it's
oh, see, the thing is, I'm a very positive person, so even if I heard that, you know, your cousin's father or your father, your high school, I don't know, the mechanic that's getting married that is so many degrees of separation from you, is, you know, when you hear, for me, I hear, oh, somebody's getting married, oh, well, there's some there's a bright point of light in the world that's happening, and I'm happy because these people are probably happy and this is putting more happiness and joy into the world. And I'm like, cool. At the same time, for the people involved, I'm kind of like, I don't know them. You know, whatever. So okay. I guess to kind of take back a little bit of what I had said earlier about being completely neutral on it, I'm not completely neutral with the influence of an act or an event on the world, I'm more neutral on who it's happening to. In other words, oh, hey, a whole bunch of people just got married. Yay, that's cool. Your brother's, father's, roommate's, college friend, coach's daughter just got married. Like, I don't know them, so sure, why not?
Well, you know why? It's because it's a case of you're the god of your world. In other words, I just found out that, you know, a person's, what is it, 7 degrees of separation from me has terminal lung cancer. And you're like, well, that's too bad. Well, now it's your cousin. Your cousin has terminal lung cancer and you're like devastated. Mm-hmm. It's only because you're the deciding element in that. I mean, is it any worse that it happened to someone you know than someone who didn't?
No, but it's
no,
the same.
It isn't. But how it impacts you is what's different.
Exactly.
So you're the god of your world right there. That's what it all boils down to, is you being the point of reference. Everything needs a point of reference to have value. Without a point of reference, nothing has value.
So if I understand this correctly, a good way to look at it is everything that we hear, see, touch, hear, smell, feel, whatever, has value to us because it's come into our awareness by way, and whoever it's come in through our awareness from, like if a friend tells us an event or we hear about it or whatever, we take value in that, oh, there are a variety of different people expressing their life in a multitude of different ways. Is that what you're saying is the best way to do things?
No, what I'm saying is that take note of what you bring into your awareness. Because, like, for example, if you walk along the street, or no, I'm not going to use the street analogy. That's not a good one.
The boardwalk. You walk along the boardwalk.
Oh, well, no. Okay, you're singing. Let's do that. You're listening to the radio, and how many songs do you notice? Some you do, some you don't, right? Uh-huh. Why do you notice some certain songs, and why don't you? You see what I'm saying?
Because some of them I really enjoy at that moment, and others I don't.
But it's well, some don't mean anything to you. It's what connects, what resonates with you is what I'm saying. It's whatever you give value to. Again, and that's what gives rise to the symbolism in your life, is with something happening. If something big happens to you, if you get in a car accident, if your house burns down, if you lose your job, they're not generally things that make you say, oh, okay, whatever. There are things that you're like, oh, my life is massively different now. If you walk by and an orange leaf falls on the ground as you're walking, you may not take notice. But I'm saying that these things that manifest symbolically outside yourself, some of them are just the ebbs and currents of your own life happening. You know what I'm saying? It's like the wind blows, and sometimes it just blows and, you know, it just makes the trees leaves dance. Sometimes it blows a tree onto your car. But neither way, it's just the wind blowing, and there's really no value to it if you look at it outside of it. But when something happens that makes you stand up and take notice, those are the symbolisms, I think, that represent our inner landscape to a degree where we're actually manifesting it out so that we get ourselves to take notice of them.
Hmm. So what do we do with that?
Well, I think the first step, for personally, in my system of belief, throw it away if you want, or anybody can throw it away. But in my system of belief, take notice, because here's an example. It's like I was at work last week. We're actually working on forming a psychic development community.
Mm-hmm.
Me and some other people. At the time, I was really kind of drilling down and kind of trying to come up with all these concepts and stuff, when all I need to do is just let it sit and percolate. And when because of who I am and my personality, I tend to like go. Even when there's nowhere to go, I'll just still try to kind of consume it and try to make things happen when I just need to let them percolate. It's like drinking tea before it's ready. You know, I want this tea to be ready, so I'm going to drink it now. And you have to still let it sit steep for 3 to 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Right. So I was doing this, and then I got this dispatch at work where I was supposed to see people that I just don't normally see on my service calls. I'm like, these are odd people. And even their calls were kind of odd. Their calls were just like, well, there's not really much I can do here, but, you know, I got to make the call. But every single call I'd go on, I would see Tortuga. I would see a turtle. And as we talked about that in the animal medicine episode. Yeah. But I would see Tortuga, and Tortuga is my totem animal.
Mm.
If Tortuga shows up, it's like, you really need to pay big attention, because I've got to tell you, you know, as I believe, totem animals are not just, oh, by the way, I'm just saying hi. They're just like, hey, look, listen. And so Tortuga kept showing up over and over again, and I kept going, well, I keep seeing turtles. What is this all about? And then I went, oh, yeah, I need to stop. I need to slow down. I just need to kind of ground myself and just let things kind of flow very slowly and easily. And if I hadn't, I probably would end up getting sick, because then the sick is your body going, okay, now I'm putting you down. I'm pinning you down, so you'll slow down. You know. So that's kind of – and I think that's kind of how these things happen, these things. And car accidents are when it gets too big. You've really put your blinders on, so we really need to force you to stop. By getting in a car accident, by having a tree fall on your car, by losing your good job or whatever it is. Other things, I think it's because it's the design of the flow. But sometimes I think it's your own universe trying to tell you to get back on track.
Hmm. And of course, that goes with our choice. When we actually realize if these signs, these promptings from the universe, we have the choice of to listen to it, take action, or not listen to it and not do anything, even if the action is to, like you said in your example, not take action.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But it's just going to pop up in another way, and eventually you're going to pin yourself down through your own doing, just because you have to.
Yeah. Now, you said something there that really kind of sparked my little attention bells going off, like, whoa, hold on just this moment. And I think you briefly mentioned it at the very end, but I'm going to bring it out again. To me, there is a part where if you're making changes in your life and you're moving from one type of lifestyle or one type of ritual or routine in your life to another one, there is some transitional issues. There's some transitional stuff that normally happens. Like, okay, for example, let's say you're moving from one city to another because for whatever reason you think it'll be a better idea, you'll have a happier life, whatever. The act of moving from the city you're in to the city you're going to can have a lot of these things that you're talking about. You know, your car can break down, your cell phone, you could lose your cell phone, you could be rear-ended. If you have become comfortable in your current city, these might be things that can happen when you're attempting to move out to a different city. And would those still be messages from the universe saying, oh, maybe a move is not a good thing at this time? Or would that just be growing pains moving from one place to another?
That really depends. That's a really good example. That's a very good example. In fact, this is what's interesting about that example is Jackie and I were just talking about this yesterday.
Oh.
We were talking about this very same thing yesterday, because we were talking about people we know that have retired.
Mm-hmm.
And we're saying how there's a person I know, he retired. And what happened is he was very much identified with his job. And then he retired. And now, from what it seems like, there seems to be a lot of just kind of this headbutting thing going on in the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, it's like I said to Jackie, what happens is it's not that he's retired one day and he's working one day and retired the next, and then he's now a new person. He's got to completely learn how to be a retired person. And there is going to be those adjustments. And some of them are forcing you out of the pattern that you had in your previous working life into the pattern of your new life. And sometimes it's just the same way. It's like, for example, if you're an expatriate or a transplant to a new city. I lived in New York for a few years. I've lived here most of my life in the Pacific Northwest. Lived in New York for several years. Then when I moved back, I was still functioning as a New Yorker when I came back. And that doesn't work here in Seattle area. It just doesn't. My friends all said, you know, let's get together and get him a one-way ticket back to New York. That's what they wanted to do, because I was so, to them, I was just obnoxious, but yet I was functioning in the New York way.
Yeah.
And I think And then sometimes I think these things will come up, like you're talking about, to try to break us out of it, because you can't necessarily do it very organically in a short period of time. Yeah, sometimes you have to make quick adjustments fast, but the symbolisms or the events or the incidences will come to kind of help you, force you out of a way of being or doing.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. How do you make the discernment between those two of, hey, you're like what you said with your animal totem, the tortuga, showing up saying, hey, man, you got to slow down a little bit, or one of these events where you're just transitioning to a different way of being. How do you say, oh, I'm transitioning, or, oh, I'm getting messages from the universe saying, this is not good.
Are you also in another way asking, when is a cigar just a cigar?
No, to me, I look at them as two different things.
Okay. So you're saying, how do you know to what the message is and what to do about it? Is that what you're asking?
The source of the message.
The source of the message.
In other words, you can get the same message with the tortuga, as you were saying earlier in your example. But for you, you applied it to setting up this psychic class, the psychic class, and getting together and along those lines. Well, what if you were not focused on that? You were focused on, let's say, taking a trip back to New York for a few days. How would you know if that was something that was saying, okay, this is a life event that where it happened, you need to slow down, or this is a kind of telling you what will happen if you take this trip to New York, kind of like taking a trip to New York, slowing down doesn't really work very well. I think you kind of speed up a little bit.
Yeah, right.
But so that's kind of where the analogy fails. But instead of saying this is a reflection of what's happening in you, with you right now, with your current events, saying something along the lines of, hey, the event that you're planning on happening on, this is how it's going to be, this is what it's going to look like at this moment. In other words, being a reflection, being a foretelling.
I think the best way I could say it is to stop, look, and listen, to sound trite. That's really it. In my opinion, the best way to discern that is to actually, when these things happen, stop and just wait and look and kind of look internally. Because if the source of it is internal, you look internal. In other words, you stop and you listen to your inner voice, and you go, and you don't sit there and force an answer out of yourself. You just sit and listen. And all it means, you know.
I'm sorry, I just got this picture of like, come on, man, give me the answer now.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's like if somebody goes, okay, go out and listen to the birds and listen to them sing, and you go outside, all right, birds, and you keep yelling at the birds and telling them to sing. How are you going to ever hear what they're saying if you're yelling at the birds to sing, 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 come on? It's more so you just stop and be quiet, and you just absorb it. Just absorb this thing that's going on. You absorb whatever's happening, and just let it settle within you. And then when you start moving again, you'll feel whatever way it's telling you to go. You just will. Get out of your brain. Get out of your head and kind of move into your heart space.
Oh, that's kind of like...
Feel it, not think it.
Yeah, that's kind of like, to use an analogy from pop culture, in the movie Forrest Gump, the character Lieutenant Dan, you know, his whole family throughout for generations had all died in wars, and he didn't because Forrest Gump saved him. Well, he's like, my destiny, this is not supposed to happen. I should have died on the battlefield, da-da-da-da-da, and all this other stuff. And then, of course, you know, there's this one very intense scene where he's up in the crow's nest of the shrimping boat in a huge storm, and he's just yelling at the universe, yelling at God, saying, come on, is this the best you got? And everything else. And in the story, in the movie, after that happened, he's good again. He's okay.
Yeah.
And you know, the idea is he let go of all that stuff that he was holding on to for so long. And he was finally able to, like what you're saying, be more in a heart space than a brain space or whatever, however you want to say it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm going to just go with your Forrest Gump analogy. Forrest Gump found himself in serendipitous, opportunistic situations and places because he didn't think. He wasn't a thinking, kind of analyzing guy. He was a heart space guy. Mm-hmm. He just went with wherever his heart took him to go, and it ended up exactly where he needed to be. But I think a lot of times is when we have these incidents happening in our life, sometimes they're just a life path kind of thing. But when they're more than just a life path, when they're a stand up and take notice, don't think it out. Don't think it out, because you're not going to come up with a good answer. All you're probably going to do is create a bigger mess. If this stuff came from inside you, you didn't have to think it out to make it come from inside you. It just did. You know, you did your little automatic manifesting kind of thing. And so you just let yourself kind of find the source of that, and you listen and feel the source of that, and it'll tell you. Because I guarantee you, when you got there, you were hitting the snooze button on it. You were doing the override switch to get, you know, to not listen to your inner voice to begin with.
Yeah. Okay, I like where you took that analogy, because there are, in the movie, a lot of stuff happened to Forrest Gump where he was just like, oh, there's the scene where he runs down to the end of the way and from his home, and he's just like, I just started running and I just didn't stop.
Yeah.
And the next thing, he's going back and forth across the United States just running. And actually, I saw a story. I hope I can find it for the show notes, where a guy literally did that. He basically just started out going across the country, and he said, yeah, there were a lot of times I was really kind of hungry, but I went from, you know, one, I think he went started in Florida and ended up in California, and he said it was such an overwhelming just letting go of everything and really understanding, you know, what's important in life, and, you know, finding, really seeing how I react with a lot of things that happen to me. And I'm just like, that's cool in a lot of ways, because self-discovery, it is awesome. And with Forrest Gump, it was more of, yeah, he didn't think about stuff. He just found himself in situations and reacted from who he was. In other words, mm-hmm. you know, he's in a war zone, like, oh, I got drafted. I'm in the war zone. I think he got drafted. I can't remember if he actually signed up or he was drafted. Anyway, he's in a war zone, and it's just like, oh, we're being ambushed. I run fast. We got to get my platoon from being in the heat of a firefight to a place where we can be picked up and saved. And he's just like, his whole idea was, part of who I am is I help people, even if I don't realize I'm helping people. I'm a good person. A good person would go out and, you know, want to save these people, help them out. And you can agree with me if you want. I think this is kind of goes with the whole topic of what we're talking about, where whatever we believe about ourselves will always be reflected in what comes into our awareness.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and I do believe that, like what you said about the whole... when you said you weren't sure about the whole Ho'oponopono part, I honestly believe that when those whole parts of ourselves that we say that where we lack self-love, mm-hmm. we are so far away from acknowledging and experiencing our own divinity that that's where we get caught up in all this. And the thing is yet our divinity is what manifests all these symbols and signs. Sometimes I think they're positive things. Sometimes they're like follow the magic thing into the woods. That's sometimes I think that's what it is. Follow the rabbit, you know. you know, is it Alice in Wonderland?
Yeah, and there's
following the rabbit.
There's also in the movie from our namesake for Take the Red Pill in the Matrix, the movie The Matrix, where he has a little thing on his computer come up say, "Follow the white rabbit."
Yeah, follow the white rabbit, exactly. And I think sometimes that's what it is. It is the white rabbit or the little rabbit that tells you that is a right path thing. Sometimes it's a car accident, which is the... I don't want to say right and wrong because it's so dualistic. But I just want to say that whether you're, let's say, in resonance or out of resonance with wherever you're going, and the heart space is where it is. I mean, the heart is the manifester. The brain doesn't manifest anything. The brain manifests nothing. The heart manifests everything. That's the tool that does it. And I think that when we get in that brain space... The brain is what the brain is the tool that separates us from our divinity. The heart is actually the part of the divine that sits in the divinity all the time. So, I mean, that is the multidimensional and quantum part of us is our heart. The brain is not multidimensional and quantum part of us. You know, it helps us to recognize and guide, but it really is just more of a, oh, yeah, you're not divine. That's the tool that tells you you're not divine. And so the part of us, when we start examining ourselves as not being divine, that's the part of ourselves that, that's where we see the holes in self-love. That's where we see the holes in where we do not have love for self. And then it's the conflict. Because if we're divine and we don't recognize ourselves as divine, isn't that kind of a paradox, a contradiction? So all these kind of things that, these obstacles and struggles that really cause us great discomfort and grief, I think sometimes, and it's not a blanket statement, but sometimes is a result of us manifesting our own lack of acceptance of our own divinity.
Ah, now you're getting into the realm of what we've talked about, I think, in just a past couple of recent episodes, where the more in line and more aware of our own divinity we are, the more of a connection we have to our God source, our universal source, the more we engage in our Buddha nature or Jesus nature. And if that is the case, my idea is, if Buddha was alive today and he reached nirvana, he reached enlightenment, and he got rear-ended in the, you know, by driving, what would that mean to Buddha? Let's just take this what-if kind of scenario. Would that mean that he was not as connected to his divine source at that moment? Or was there something in him that was expecting to be rear-ended or expecting, wanting some drama?
No, I think it would be with him as it is. He being rear-ended, I use that because, especially in our culture, not very many people get in car accidents and say, you know, these things happen. Most of the people get really out of control when it comes to a car accident. But the Buddha, I'm sure, would be, car accidents happen. They're not good. They're not bad. They happen. It would just be an acceptance of the event for purely an event.
Yeah, I know that that's his perception. That's how he'll look at it. But what we're talking about is things outside of ourselves being a reflection of our internal nature. And I'm saying, if somebody who has reached the level of enlightenment as Buddha, you would think that he may not have a whole lot of baggage or stuff that he's still carrying around. He would be very much engaged with his heart space, with his, you know, living out of the heart instead of the brain or whatnot. And if that's true, that what happens and the events that happen to us outside of ourselves are a reflection of what's going on internally, then what would, you know, hypothetically that mean that was happening to the Buddha?
I can't answer that. I really can't. I just can't, because I'm not a Buddha, and I don't. I mean,
yes,
I'm so far away from that. I know what you're saying. We are all Buddhas, but I guess the question is would the Buddha even find himself in that place in the first place? Would the Buddha even manifest that? And if the Buddha did manifest it, would it be because somebody else needed to attract the Buddha into their lives?
Oh.
You see. And that was the best opportunity to do so. I mean, there's a lot of paths we can take that. And but to say you get in a car accident does not mean something specific.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that you have to sit and analyze why you got in the car accident. But whatever the car accident brought forth, it was an opportunity to make a change that you didn't take in the past. In a lot of cases, either it was something in your life path, or it's an opportunity to do something different that you had not grabbed yet. But I do think that there are a lot of these things that happen, if they're not life path things, they're symbolic in nature. They're a symbolism of something we need to confront in our own inner landscape.
Very cool. Very cool. So is that your last thought on this topic, or do you have a little bit more that you want to add as a closing argument, as a parting thought, as it were?
I'm gonna let it rest on that. I don't want to go too ad nauseum on that.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because I'm like, I think that kind of puts it together right nicely. It feels like there's so much more that we could say, but I know we're running out of our time for what we normally have for our episodes. So
you capped it with the Buddha, and you know you can't really trump the Buddha. So I'm gonna be like, all right, let's just wrap it up with the Buddha.
I had to use that for contrast, you know. You know, and I remember last episode, you're like, that was kind of a weak example, Donald. Okay, we'll use the Buddha. How does the Buddha do?
You're
that?
Stepping up your game, is what you're doing. You're bringing in the Buddha. Your Buddha is kind of like your. Your Buddha's your ringer. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Or she. Buddha's genderless. If you ask.
Well, with you, David, I always have to bring my A game, so it's good. So.
Well, I appreciate it.
So for David and I would like to take this opportunity to thank you for listening to this episode. If this is your first time hearing us, we hope that we have expanded your mind and give you some food for thought, as it were. If you're a longtime listener, we thank you for continuing to take part in David's and I's little experiment with dispensing knowledge to the interweb.
Yes. And if we leave you hungry for more of this stuff as you listen to the episode, come find us at TakeTheRedPillPodcast.com. That's our website where all of the episodes reside. You can also download us from iTunes. Just type in Take the Red Pill under the podcast section to find and subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also hit us up at Facebook, TTRP Podcast, after the Facebook.com. You can listen to our episodes right there as well. You can give comments on any of those three places of what you think of the show. We'd love to hear from you.
Awesome. So for Take the Red Pill, I am Donald Dalton, wishing you to see the world in yourself.
And I'm David Deere. Whatever happens outside of yourself, stop, look, and listen.
Reminds me of Stop, Drop, and Roll.
Oh, stop, well, or Stop, Rock, and Roll. I don't know.
If the band's a knocking.
I always think they say Stop, Rock, and Roll whenever. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense.